very honoured and excited to be asked to speak here. We thought it was such an occasion that we bought a new dress. My husband insisted I buy a dress and wear a dress. I even got shoes, so we're all ready to go. First off, I am going to give you a definition and then I'm going to tell you a story. The definition is epiphany, a moment of sudden revelation or insight, and in a little while, an epiphany will come. My story starts 34 years ago when I became a Christian. Now, I don't know if other people are like me. I suspect they are deep down, but don't admit it. But I often have quite a romantic view of things, not in my head. You know, my head's analytical. It's knowing what's going to... things are going to be like, but deep down I have a really romantic view of things. And I think, you know, if you enter into a marriage and you know marriage can be rough, it's not all smooth sailing, and then you suddenly get disappointed that it didn't go so well for you, you've been romantic. So this is my picture here of my hopes and expectations in my romantic area of what it might be to be a Christian, especially if I was a good Christian, and after a period of time that this is what would happen. I'd be living in this kind of garden of beauty and wonder and God's bounty all around me under this open sky of His blessing, looking up because I was spiritual, of course, and having a secret smile because I know stuff, of course, and the wings because I'm so angelic. So this is what I hoped for. Didn't go as planned. Didn't end up being a very good Christian. And in terms of what standards some people might hold Christians to, complete failure. I've never, ever been nominated for a Christ-like award. And this is the reason. It's a very easy reason, love. Right from the very beginning, as I read the Bible, I was alarmed and disturbed by these scriptures like this one. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. I was like, seriously? Seriously? How do you do that? What does that look like? How could you love God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength? All seemed a tad extreme. I couldn't picture it. I couldn't understand it. How do you make breakfast if you're all there? I didn't get it, and I couldn't wrap my head around it. And that was just the beginning, because after that came all those one another's, and Tim is going to be speaking about the one another's in a couple of weeks. There are loads of them. Love one another, be kind to one another, accept one another, stop judging one another. Imagine what would happen if we stopped judging one another. Goodness. You know, as a young girl, I married at 19, I'm hearing all this stuff, thinking, I'm having enough trouble loving my one another husband and loving my one another family and my friends. These are the people I like. I have trouble accepting them and not judging them and being kind to them. How do you love the bigger picture, love all of those people? And then enemies, how do you love enemies and how do you turn the other cheek? I just could not work it out. Then there was forgive one another. And forgiveness to me feels like a ball that's a little higher than me. It's not an exercise ball. It's weightier than an exercise ball. And the process of forgiveness is to roll that ball up an almost vertical incline and get it to sit up the top. So I'd be going like, okay, I've got to forgive somebody. So I take my ball and I start pushing it up the hill and I go up, 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 up the hill. But then the ball is above you and quite frequently the ball falls straight on you, knocks you down, rolls you over, out the door, down the street, the ball is gone, you're on the ground, and it's even more work to get back up and start again and do it over. And so I'd do this, and then when I would get the ball up there, I'd be so excited. I'd like, yes, I am spiritual. I forgave somebody, and I'd be so excited that I'd forgive somebody, and then I'd turn around and there'd be 70 times 7. 70 times 7 on the blackboard. You've got to do it again. It's like, oh, I can't do it again. It just was too hard. So I realized I needed to change. And when I was in my early 20s, my husband and I, we went off to Youth with a Mission. I went with a really clear expressed desire that I'd discussed long and hard with Donna McDermott. We were close friends. That we both were wondering, could you love God without strings? Could there be, was there a way to love God if there was no heaven and no hell? Would we want to be in relationship with God if those things were not in play? Could there be unconditional love between us? And so I went off to Youth with a Mission to find out and did a lot of courses. There are so many courses in Youth with a Mission: discipleship training course, counseling course, leadership course. I even went one further than most people and I did the inductive Bible study course. That's for the really heavy, hard hitter people who want to really go all the way. That's what I did. It's a 9-month course. I did 5 months because something happened in between and I had to go. Not me, it wasn't me. In an inductive Bible course, you read the Bible book by book. You read each book at least 4 times. And when you, the first reading through is out loud in one sitting. And you are allowed to have some people with you to take turns in case your voice dries out. But we would start at 5:30 in the morning and for 5 months read the Bible. So I've read the Bible. These courses are live-in. They're 3 to 6 months long. They're full immersion courses. We went on to run some Youth with a Mission bases. We went on to run courses ourselves. And we got to live by faith for 10 years. Now, as you heard, I wasn't a very good Christian. We didn't have a church behind us because, you know, I was the bad Christian. So we actually had to learn to live by faith and actual miracles and see amazing things happen. Also, of course, we had to, my mother, who's sitting right over there, she was there helping as well. But miracles became an extremely normal part of our life and are, in fact, still a really normal part of our life. And in my life, there was amazing exterior things. But internally, mostly wilderness. Not for Phil. Phil was not like that. Phil was a little sunshine and happiness his entire life. And where I had expected a garden, I found more of a rocky path, and it was a bit uphill, and sometimes there was snow. You'd come around a corner, there'd be a beautiful tree. Sometimes there'd be a patch of lawn you could go and lay down on. Sometimes there'd even be a bit of fruit hanging around. But there's a lot of snow and a lot of rocks and sometimes quite horrible storms. And over the years, I changed, I grew, I matured, as you do. I made incremental changes in my life, but most of the changes regarding what I felt I had to do with love were changes of grit my teeth decision, be loving when you don't feel like it, do the right thing sort of things. They were very choice-oriented. And despite praying for a long time before I went to home, for 10 years while I was at home, and for a lot of years after I was at home, the transformation that I hoped for, the waking up to be someone really different, didn't happen. And I was still me. So now you know what's coming. What's coming next? Epiphany. God, you're so slow. Epiphany. An epiphany is coming next. Remember, a moment of sudden revelation or insight. This is my cute granddaughter, Priya. Now, in 2003, I had an epiphany. And some epiphanies are really wonderful, and they're life-giving. Mine wasn't. Mine was simply that I wasn't going to change, that I wasn't going to wake up all loving, and that there was no Mother Teresa living in me, and nor would there ever be. And that I was stuck not only with who I was, but now stuck with really hard questions. Why doesn't God transform me? Is something wrong with me? Didn't I try hard enough? Is the Bible true? All these very difficult questions. And my response to the epiphany looked like this. I was very, 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 very angry. Let down. I felt ripped off. I felt I'd been maybe lied to, that there was supposed to be this nice father God person with this nice daughter God, oh, I'm not God, daughter girl. And when you ask, you receive, and you get what you ask for, and it's all a nice little garden with wings. But I'd been asking for 26 years, and I hadn't been asking for a fortune or fame or for even a Ferrari, nothing. I'd just been asking to be what he wanted me to be. I wasn't asking for anything that I thought was too difficult, and I didn't understand that this is what's written there, and I'm asking, why don't I get there? So I let God know that I'd had enough now. I was over it. I wasn't going to ask anymore. I wasn't going to hope anymore. I wasn't going to expect any change. I wasn't going to try to change. And also, I'm not speaking to you. So I stopped speaking to God too. I let him know how upset I was. Now, last in the morning service, I said pissed off, which I shouldn't have said. So I'm not going to say it again. And from then in 2003 until about 18 months ago, I only talked to God in emergencies. Now, wasn't that I became an unchristian? It wasn't that amazing things stopped happening in my life. They didn't. Some of the most amazing things that have ever happened in my life happened in the next few years when I was not talking to God. But 18 months ago, in June 2010, I went and did a course, not a Christian course. I've been to a Christian course, thank you. I was battling some really big issues in my life. If you thought I had a problem with forgiveness before, I really had a big one now. And was depressed and having some things happening. And I went to do this course. And when I went to the course, I learned a whole lot of things about how the brain works. And this led me to the intentional practice of gratitude. Now, you may think that I was somewhat unfamiliar with the concept of gratitude to have taken so long and to get there. But in fact, I was the opposite was true. Now, obviously, I read the Bible quite a bit, and I know there's tons of stuff about gratitude and thanks in there. In everything, give thanks, because this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you. And when I read that, I just thought, no, it couldn't mean everything. This is what God means. In everything that is really nice, give thanks, because this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you. And besides that, this is what I thought. In everything, give thanks, because this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you who are optimists, and the rest of you should feel free to whine. Deep down, and I had many a conversation about this with my friends, that I thought optimists were deluded people, mad, just avoiding what reality, not facing what was there, that they were weak and were suppressing and denying things. And to be honest, I know people exactly like that. I know Christians exactly like that, who in their fear of being known for who they are, in their pride or in their want to put on a certain mask and appear a certain way, do band-aid over things and put on it's all right, but everything's fine here, faith, faith, faith. That is a lie. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about true optimists who are optimistic, who understand gratitude. These people, I thought, were not very bright. And their eye was much brighter because I understood reality. But as you will see, it was me who was deluded. I also had, as if that weren't enough, I also had a daughter doing a gratitude project that had gone viral around the world. Now, she started this project in April 2008. So from April 2008, I'm well familiar with gratitude. We talk about it a lot. This gratitude project is doing amazing things. I agree with it. I tell people about it. In January 2010, Haley and I start discussing making a documentary about this. In later January 2010, Haley and I spent 3 months writing a comedy film script about gratitude. So I'm familiar with it. I have a gratitude journal. Occasionally, when something really nice happens, I write in the gratitude journal. But it wasn't really changing much, not anything on a really deep level. And the reason it wasn't was because I wasn't practicing it. I wasn't actually doing it. I just agreed with it. I just thought it was a wonderful idea and something nice to talk about. I didn't actually go and do it. And on this course, I learned that instead of waiting for something good to happen or not to notice or something nice to be there that I could write in my journal about, I needed to be like a detective and go out and work toward finding the good stuff in my life and looking for a different reality, because it's all reality, it's just how you look at it. Then I needed to start deliberately looking forward to things, that I needed to start deliberately looking for things that to laugh about and to smile about and to find all the good in my life and take every little bit that I could. And my life changed pretty significantly and pretty rapidly. In September, so 3 months later, Hayley and I did begin work on that documentary. Now, I don't know if that documentary will ever go ahead. It's just the most enormous, costly project. But I began a year of research into gratitude because I thought, now, wouldn't it be really nice if in our documentary we had a couple of scientists or people who will come along and say something, you know, that would be, add a bit of gravity to it. We should do that. So I started this innocent search into gratitude and to how the mind works, and was so surprised, so shocked and amazed by what I found. It really amazed me. And despite all what I had heard through Hayley's project, what happened in my own life amazed me. Now I'm going to play you the 4-minute teaser for the film so you can get a little idea about Hayley's project. It's a fabulous introduction into intentional gratitude. I'll be back in a second. Oh, yeah. One of the most transformative things about gratitude is the fact that it is outward. That is what gratitude is. It is not just appreciation. Appreciation's part of gratitude, but gratitude has to be outward. Otherwise, it's not gratitude. So it has to go either to God or to other people. That is gratitude. It is the recognition of what you have in your life, the acknowledgement that you are a beneficiary, and then the communication of that appreciation to the source of that blessing. It's very difficult to maintain a I won't talk to you attitude to God if you have to thank him all day long. So that fixed that. And if you want to shake up your spiritual life, it's extraordinary. I was at a service here earlier in the year, maybe 6-9 months ago, one of my occasional visits, and Tim was talking about wilderness, and I realized that word had not crossed my mind for a long time, that I didn't think in those terms anymore, and that's the term I'd thought about my spiritual life constantly. So that was quite an eye-opener to me to realize that that change had taken place and I hadn't noticed. The practice of gratitude is the most wonderful way to introduce people who don't have a belief and faith to the understanding that there is a bigger picture here, because there are only so many people you can thank. You run out pretty quick. There's something bigger. When you're looking for what's good, you've got to start thanking God. And when you start thanking people, it has this great effect of starting to move you from your own obsession with your little concerns and grievances and things to the lives of other people. And that is amazing. That has all sorts of implications for relationships. When we thank people, we validate who they are, who they've been created to be. We communicate to them not only what they do for us, but who they are to us. And that does something in people, and it really strengthens the connections you have to each other, but that they have to other people, because it changes them inside. It's very profound. And this cherishing of each other is something we tend not to do very much. We're rushing, we're busy, we've got really important things. We don't take time to cherish one another. I highly recommend it. Some months into starting to practice gratitude, I started to notice moments where I would be a little bit more tolerant than I would normally have been. And then a little while later I'd notice someone would say something, and then rather than kind of be going like this, I'd be going, having a response of empathy or compassion toward their situation, when normally I might have been angered about the situation. And there's this little process happening, and I'm kind of going, who are you? Who are you? Where did that come from? And my husband was also going, who are you? These little changes were taking place. I started to have some thoughts that were less selfish, and I'd find myself in the aisle in the supermarket, instead of being impatient to get through, I'd be thinking, I just really want to say something to that person serving there and be kind to them. I was like, who are you? What are you doing wanting to be kind to the people in the supermarket? That was not me. So these little things were happening, and I don't want you to go away. It would be you'd be in complete deception to go away from here imagining that I've become this wonderful, kind, loving person all the time. That would be a very, very long way from the truth. But it's as though there were little plants growing, something that I'm not doing. I'm not having to make an effort toward. I'm not having to manufacture or choose. Things are coming up on their own, and that is delightful. But what really excited me about this was when I was doing all this research, I came across a study that talked about a group of people where for 15 minutes a day everyone had been given an appreciation practice to do, and they did it for 30 days. At the end of those 30 days, there was a 100% rise in the level of the hormone DHEA. Now, this hormone is so incredibly great. Everyone wants it because it makes you more relaxed, it makes you more happy, it makes you look younger, and I'm going to quote from the study, increases in DHEA were significantly correlated to increases in warm-heartedness, and in brackets they wrote, kindness, appreciation, tolerance and compassion. I was like, yes, there's a reason this is happening. I'm not imagining this happen. It's happening. And that was so exciting. The same study showed that there was a 35% reduction in the level of cortisol, which is the stress hormone. So imagine being 100% up in the good one and 35% down in the bad one. That's a lot of change. I came across so much science that excited me, and that's why I put together the seminar. It's 4.5 hours long, and I do not get to cover in any depth or as many things as I want to cover, because there is so much out there that is compelling about practicing gratitude and the changes it can make in your life. I have come to believe something quite different to what I used to believe, and that I now believe that we are actually created for joy and happiness, that is the state in which we function at our peak. I used to imagine that God didn't care much if you were happy, because you had to be doing the important things. You had to be involved in what was right, what was, you know, the mission, salvation, the important things. And happiness was a nice byproduct that occasionally came, but was not really that important. Happiness can wait. We can get that in heaven. That doesn't matter now. I thought seeking personal happiness was rather self-indulgent, and even going to great efforts to make someone else happy was so transient and so not, you know, necessarily that important. Good if you've got time, but not a driver for your life. Since I did all this research and looked into how the mind works, with the relationship between the mind and the body and what gratitude and happiness does to you, I have had to change my mind. I think I'm facing a design issue. This is the design of this body. And if God only cared about us being happy in heaven, he wouldn't have given us this body, because the science says, and look at this happy moment. Was that, if you went to that wedding, that was the happiest wedding. When we are happy, and I'm only going to go through, giving you a few, there's a lot. When we're happy, we are more creative, we solve more problems, we are able to focus more efficiently, we are kinder, more loving, more helpful, we are more generous and more involved in our community, we are stronger, we are fitter, we tend to exercise more, we are more resilient, both physically, mentally and emotionally. We handle physically physical pain much better. Actually, a lot better. The difference is huge between how you feel, even feel pain if you're happy. When you're happy and joyful, your brain releases chemicals that cascade through your body and do all sorts of things to you, not least of which is healing. They heal you. Scientists now know that being happy creates self-esteem. This stunned me. Creates self-esteem. We are on this big effort to try and get our kids to have self-esteem. Just teach them to be happy. They will create their own self-esteem just out of that. A woman named Elizabeth Blackburn is a Nobel Prize winning researcher and doctor who won a prize for medicine, has done a study that shows that people who are happy and optimistic at age 50 are biologically 10 years younger than those who are not, who are pessimistic and unhappy. That's 20%. That is a 20% difference in the rate at which you age. This seems like design. It seems to me that God would want us to be more creative, more loving, more kind, more helpful, more community involved, fitter. All of these things seem to me that to point to the fact that we were meant to be happy. We function at our best when we are happy and joyful. And I think that deep down we somehow know that we have this, you know, deep knowing that we should be happy, that it's crucial that we are happy if we are to do our best and be our best and experience the best. And maybe we even feel somewhat entitled to it because we're certainly searching for it. You know, people search for happiness all the time. That's what we do. And if you ask someone why they're doing something, they'll say, oh, I'll give you a reason. But if you ask again and get them to drill down and they're willing to be honest, they will say eventually, because I want to be happy, because it makes me happy, because it gives me a sense of peace and well-being, and I want that. That we know we need that and we fight to find it. We're not terribly good at finding happiness, especially in this Western society. We have become appalling at finding happiness. In only a few years, the number one reason that people visit the doctor will be depression. If you think about how many reasons you could potentially visit the doctor and know that the most often reason will be depression, that's scary and alarming, because people who are depressed, the impact on everything around them, the people around them, their marriages, their relationships, their workplaces, their physical health, everything is impacted by being depressed. And depression isn't something that doesn't affect Christians. At least half the Christians I personally know are on antidepressants. That's a lot. And I don't go down around, I'm not doing a survey. I'm not going out and surveying people. I just know that, so who knows how many are really on it. I haven't asked. So clearly we're not really getting it right. So we seek happiness in all sorts of places, and Christians often seek it in exactly the same place that everybody else does, in possessions and shoes and success and travel and status symbols and the good body, the fashion, the beauty, the adventures, money, houses and relationships. And only two of these actually have any potential to affect your long-term happiness, which is why it's also mad that we keep seeking happiness in all these odd places. Relationships can affect your long-term happiness. They can also affect your long-term unhappiness if they don't go very well. Oddly, the location of your house has an impact on your long-term happiness. Wouldn't have been what I thought, but yes. If you win $1 million, in 9 months to 12 months' time, you'll be back to as happy as you were before you won it. So we all know wealth doesn't really make a difference, yet we all still try and hope. It's this romantic idea we still have against what our head is saying. We hope for something different. Scientists know that the practice of gratitude raises the level of happiness the average person is feeling, so from wherever you're at, up by 25%. That's huge. That's better than $1 million. While you practice gratitude, you are going to be 25% happier than you were before, and that is amazing. And I would say that I would be at least 25% happier, probably a lot more happier. And what I really love about this is that it's free and that anyone can do it. If you're over the age of 8, you can do this. that you can do it anywhere, that you can do it in any situation, that no one can take it off you, that a stock market won't come and take it away. And this is really amazing. It has released me from so much fear. And I can see why grateful people might be more generous, because, you know, when you're going to go give some money or something, I think, oh no, I need that money to keep me safe. And now I know that I can be happy if I've got no money. I could be happy. I've learned how to be happy and how to live a rich and full life without money. So I'm much more likely to give it away because I'm not so worried anymore about needing it to keep me safe from whatever might be out there. And, you know, I just have such a sense of, oh, I have to tell people this is really, really important that people know it. Imagine if we have a church of happy people who are loving and happy. I reckon we would have a lineup out the door. But the words happy, joyous, loving, kind are not the words that come to mind when you talk about Christians. If you ask out in the street, you're probably more likely to find the words fear, hell, judgment, that sort of thing, confinement. And that's really, really sad, because I know that isn't what God intended for us. He's given us some really clear direction in another way. Samuel Taylor Coleridge said that the happiness of life is made up of minute fractions, the little soon forgotten charities of a kiss or smile, a kind look, a heartfelt compliment, and the countless infinitesimal of pleasurable and genial feeling. It is the little things. Both Shane and Tim mentioned moments last week, and both talked about the fact that our lives are made up of moments, and they are. We kind of have this imaginary thing that some other big life is going to come, something's going to happen, and life will be different, or this will arrive, or that will arrive, or we'll get there. But that isn't going to happen. All we've got is these little moments, and they are the only currency we have. They are gone when they are gone. When you trade them for something, and you will trade them for something, then they are gone. And you can trade them for a good moment if you want to. We can trade them for a bad one. The choice is up to you. And when I first came across the concept of the choice was up to me, I was like, yeah, well, you don't understand the circumstances of my life, ha-ha. But actually, I found that the choice is up to me. I can choose in a moment how I'm going to live that moment, how I'm going to see that moment, how I'm going to approach that moment, and what that moment is going to be for me. And when you take the time to focus on the good in your life and get all these really good moments, suddenly you piece together something rich and beautiful. And when you do the opposite, you've pieced together something horrible, and you in the long run choose it. As you choose all these good moments, the people around you get the effect of that, and so it's a really ongoing thing. I think I'd been doing this. Ferris says life moves pretty fast, and if you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it. In my desire to get things right and do things right and be of service, etc., I was rushing through my life and missing all the beauty that was there that would probably have really connected me to God had I bothered to look for it. My daughter Georgia was out filming in the street, and she filmed a little moment, and she inadvertently filmed some people missing a moment. So I thought I'd play you this little minute. Now when I see a child dancing, I stop and I look and I sit and I smile and I really get into it and enjoy it. But what amazes me is that I see children dancing now when I never, ever saw them before. I was like the guys on the thing. I just walked right past. Now my radar's looking for good things, so I see them. Gratitude isn't positive psychology, though. It's not kind of labelling things what they are not. It's not putting up something on your it's not me sticking on my mirror, I am beautiful, I look 25. Of course I do. It's not making up fantasy and being thankful for it. It's actually looking and finding the facts and the truth in your life that are good, because there is goodness there and wonder and beauty that needs you to look at it for you to find it. And the more you look, the more you find. Now, the Bible had something to say about this. Philippians 4, verse 8, finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, whatever amuses you. That's not really in it. That's not in there. I just put it in there because I thought I'd amuse you. If anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think on these things. I don't want you to go away from here thinking, oh, life, if you practice gratitude in a very intentional way, then life is all wonderful and there is no pain and there is no grief and there is all of those things, because that's not true. And all those things are very present in my life. Also, it's not instant. Yes, there are instant changes. I did notice instant changes, like within hours. But some of what I've talked about has taken time to build in my life. As I said, I used to think people who were grateful in the face of life's awfulness were just depressing, denying, stupid people. I think quite differently. Having been someone who avoided pain a lot in my life, I can see now that gratitude's given me a resilience and a totally different perspective, not only on good things but on painful things. Some months ago, something quite traumatic happened in my life, one of the most traumatic things that's ever happened to me. And I was shocked at my own response. I had never ever thought I would be someone who could have this response. My response when I heard was, good, I am about to learn something, I am going on a journey, and that's good. And that has made this journey really incredible, because even though it's been excruciating in a part of my life, not all of my life. It hasn't obliterated everything like previous pain did. And I've been able to go through the last few months happier than I've ever been in my life, with the worst thing that's happening in my life happening. And that is incredible to me. So I feel that gratitude gives you a grace through difficulty that maybe can't be got another way. It's like a muscle. The more you use it, the stronger it grows, and the more power you have to use it. If you don't practice it, I've learned even while I do this job, that if I don't practice gratitude, that its benefits go away for me. Even if I'm talking about it, even if I'm speaking about it, even if I'm writing about it and making a film about it, if I don't actually take time to notice the moments during the day and thank God for them and thank others for them, the effect of gratitude will go away. So its benefaction will go unnoticed, and your capacity to draw on its gifts will be diminished. The opposite is true, that the more you do it, the easier it is, the more it changes the neural networks in your mind, and you start to default to happiness in your thinking. And that has been a eye-opener for me. Never have had that happen before. And now we have another epiphany to end things for you. This one was a good one. While I was writing this talk, I realised that actually I do kind of live in a garden. My face is faced up, not because I'm spiritual, but because I'm going, wow, amazing, thank you. I do have a smile on my face because I've found something special that I do know, and I've decided to forget about the wings. Thank you.